Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRCC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Whitman Recovery Community Center is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRCC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. And their hours are currently 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, although I hear they have a noon AA meeting on Saturday. So if AA is your thing, there's a place to go on Pullman. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and for the August calendar, I respectfully ask that you go online to latahrecoverycenter.org and check it out there for all the offerings. There's yoga, there's painting, there's just a ton of stuff. So check that out. And one thing I want to highlight, because we're just about a month out now, is the 10th anniversary recovery festival that's coming up on September 13th out at East City Park here in Moscow. It's going to run from 11 to 3, and basically it's going to break down like this. 11 a.m. we'll have our welcome, and you can browse the resources and information tables hosted by the local nonprofits. Connect, explore, and enjoy. 12 o'clock, we'll have lunch and live music. Enjoy a delicious lunch featuring fried chicken, salad, and anniversary cake, my favorite, and live music by Solid Ghost. They've been supporting us for years, and they put out some great music. 1 p.m., we'll be doing raffle prizes, and there'll be free raffle tickets for everybody. You can win great prizes donated by local businesses in support of the LRCC and WRCC. 2 p.m., Recovery Out Loud. You can hear powerful recovery stories from members of our community and a heartfelt time of sharing and inspiration. And it's all hosted by the Latah Recovery Community Center, the Whitman Recovery Community Center, and Vandal Recovery. And on to today's guest and topic. Today's guest is a recurring feature in the form of Dr. Valerie Russo. Hi, Val.
Hey there. How's it going?
It's going good. Good to see you again. It's been a little while.
Yep.
But you always bring really cool stuff. And as always in the studio, well, almost always, is Miss Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello. Thank you.
Good to see you, too. It's been a couple of weeks. I've been running around the universe taking care of business, so it's good to be back in the studio/conference room with you.
Yes.
Today's topic, we're going to be talking about trauma and trust, and we're going to be highlighting Brianne Brown's The Braving Inventory, but Valerie, you wanted to start out with a little something you wanted to read.
Yes, I wanted to frame our talk today, and like you had said, we're going to be using Brené Brown's Braving Inventory from her Dare to Lead series. And trust has always been a very interesting topic, especially in my work throughout the decades of trying to help people understand how to build it, how to rebuild it, especially after there's been some sort of traumatic event and people feel toppled over and trying to figure out I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person that doesn't trust anybody anymore, but how do I even begin to do that? So, trauma and rebuilding trust, this is from A Journey Towards Healing, Understanding the Path from Pain to Renewal. Trauma is a profound and often life-altering experience. It can emerge from a single harrowing event or from a succession of distressing incidents that chip away at a person's sense of security and well-being. Whether its roots lie in abuse, betrayal, loss, or disaster, trauma frequently leaves in its wake a trail of broken trust. Trust in oneself, in others, and sometimes in the very fabric of the world. So I just wanted to frame our discussion today about that, because when people lose that sense of safety, it's one of the basic needs on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I mean, you know, our safety, food, just the basics. And I think we sometimes just figure out people will do it somehow, but how? Like, I love recipes, all kinds of recipes. And to me, this is like the perfect recipe for trying to trust. And that acronym BRAVING, each letter is a definition, basically, of how we can go about framing and thinking about rebuilding trust and having that discussion with others and people that we know and love. And I think I will just say them all, and then we could just go through and kind of have examples in our own lives and recovery work on how does that show up.
Sure. I just want to throw in braving. The definitions we'll go through, but she says at the top of the page, the acronym BRAVING breaks down trust into seven elements.
Correct.
So that's an interesting thought that it's, I grew up in the electronics manufacturing industries where we were famously known for TLAs, three-letter acronyms, even broken down to a TLA as an acronym. So it's nice. It makes it easy. It's like fear for people in AA is like F everything and run. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so the and I just love that it's braving, like, you know, like you're braving through trying to figure out how to trust again. And the B is boundaries, and the R is reliability. A is accountability. V is the vault. I is integrity. N is non-judgment. And the G is generosity. And we can go through and kind of define those and how do they show up in our lives and people that we work with.
Oh, yeah. Well, boundaries. I mean, that's what a great place to start. Because I'm horrible at, well, I'm good at trying to set boundaries, but, you know, quite often I find people violate them without a second thought. Even when you try to convey them, you know, like she says here, setting boundaries is making clear what's okay and what's not okay and why.
Correct.
And, you know, maybe in more intimate relationships, people like to respect that, but you know, I have my experiences, people just like stomp all over them because they can, for whatever reasons, you know, power structure, whatever.
What I love about this is that it gives you a framework, and as you go down and look through these, and if those are getting broken and there's no reliability or accountability to your boundaries, that is a person that goes outside the circle of you don't give them the trust. Like when I worked with students forever and I would ask them, you know, talk to me about trust. How do you figure out if you're going to trust someone or not? Especially teaching sexual assault awareness and violence prevention, domestic violence and stalking classes. And people would tell me, well, I'll just trust someone until they give me a reason not to trust them. And I'm like,
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
That can lead to some
more trauma. So I'm like, well, I am going to challenge that paradigm to we earn people's trust. So we don't trust until there's evidence that they have earned the trust. And that was a head tilt for a lot of young people and all people's ages, honestly.
Sure.
To try to figure out how do you do that, right?
And I do think that boundaries and seeing if someone's respectful of your boundaries definitely is a good indication of whether or not they're a safe person to be around you, you know, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think a lot happens in our society where we don't want to be that person, so we kind of stay silent and ignore things that feel icky in our stomach. And we have the most amazing radar, our gut, inside our bodies that do the most efficient job of keeping us alive if we listen to it.
Right.
And of course, I will just add to that, we literally cannot keep ourselves 100% safe. If someone is going to harm us, that may happen. So yeah. I don't want to set that up for victim blaming. Like if you just listen and do a good job and, you know.
Yeah, you're going to be safe.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's a whole complicated another conversation and probably a whole different show.
But right.
Anyway. I think also having boundaries and being able to set and keep them with people makes me a more safe person to be around, more reliable and healthy person to be around too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, because you're not expecting to have to dodge bullets constantly with other people around you.
Right. I think not having boundaries that I need for myself would wind up leading to a lot of resentments, which would really cause problems in my recovery.
Right, right. Resentments in my program actually have the power to kill. So yeah, that's something to be aware of. Reliability.
Reliability is you do what you say you'll do at work. If we're in a work setting, this means staying aware of your competencies and limitations so you don't overpromise and are able to deliver on commitments and balance competing priorities. And if we wanted to flip that into a personal situation about reliability, it's you just say you're going to do what you're going to do. Like I said, I was going to do this today, and I showed up, and you can trust that. And you showed up at the right time, even though I took your parking space.
Yeah, I'll have to work on that resentment with my sponsor. But
okay.
In personal relationships, if I say I'm going to empty the dishwasher and I don't, you know, there's going to be ramifications of that. There are consequences in the real world for, you know, not doing what you said we were going to do. And when I was out there drinking, I was reliably unreliable.
So you could always count on that.
Yeah, you could always count on me not doing what I said I was going to do. And I thought that was great because that kind of removed all my responsibility.
All your accountability.
You know? Yeah, all my accountability. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, well, he's a flake. He's not going to show up. So I would overpromise and underdeliver.
Okay.
Now, in regards to work, when I worked over at this company in Pullman that'll remain nameless, but its initials are SEL, this was a big deal.
Yes.
You made promises based on what people expected and then did what you can to over-deliver. Sometimes that wasn't possible. But there were, expectations that were built up around that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most people had a 70 to 80% success rate, and that's pretty good for a manufacturing industry where you're always dealing with moving targets. So it builds up people's, again, we're talking about trust, that, oh, I'm gonna have Johnny do this project because, he delivered on the last three, over what we expected. So, and, interpersonally, too. In my AA program, I sponsor men, and they, the word gets out, that, I've been working the steps with them, we went through it fairly quickly, I understand it, and so on and so forth. And then you have people coming up to you going, hey, would you, sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like building trust through proof.
Yeah.
Right.
I was just going to say, I really like the part in this definition of reliability where it talks about that you are at work. This means that you are staying aware of your competencies and limitations and you're not overpromising. And I think that's really good because you're being realistic about what you can do so that you're not saying you can do things that really you shouldn't be doing, because then you're letting people down and yourself down. You're getting stressed.
Right.
And so I think that's actually very important.
I think it's very important. And it was along the lines of what I was thinking. I was thinking bringing this back into the more personal realm of trauma. Mm. And when you think about people who've been through something, and to set a boundary, you need to have some sense of you're really worth it, you know? And so there lies some of that, that confidence in yourself as a person to actually put a boundary out to say, hey, this really matters to me, and I'd really like you to honor that. And then to watch and see if the person's reliable, and if they're not, still have the voice. And that's, I think, where the challenges come in, is helping people understand they can have that voice. Like, they deserve all of these things. People deserve to have a way to figure out if someone is trustworthy and safe in their life, especially if they've been through something. Right. Because then it's hard to trust your judgment as a human, because we all believe we've had something to do with something that has happened to us. There's just no way out of that. I think it's really hard for humans to just say, well, I was victimized, and, you know, that was that person's fault that this bad thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. I think as humans, we want to feel like we have some control over our lives, and so we pull some responsibility towards ourselves. And in my field, we call that victim blaming. We don't want to do that, but humans, as humans, we do that to ourselves. We take some of our own accountability that we don't deserve to be wearing, and then we have a filter that's very hard to figure out. How do we put people back in our lives that are safe and good for us? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Do you think it does? Do you think that some of that wanting to take part in things that aren't our fault has to do with, like, maybe that lack of power? If we had no control over it, that's really hard. It'd be easier to say, well, but if I had done this, or I should have done this,
absolutely,
then it kind of maybe feels like the power is back on us a little bit.
And it's a very bad veil to wear.
Yeah, I was thinking,
it's a dark, shameful, guilt one. And so, but yes, people really, that's that just world belief. We just want to make sure somehow that we have control over our lives, all of our lives. And then we make up reasons, you know, like, I don't live where there's volcanoes, so I'm safe from them. Or I don't live where there's tornadoes, so I'm not going anywhere near there. So I have control over that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and we break that all the way down to when things happen with interpersonal violence, and somehow we still feel responsible for that.
Right.
And which is why I really wanted to talk about this today, because this, you know, this inventory gives people kind of a better way to believe that they have the power to figure out how to do this again.
It is a great topic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So the moving into the accountability, we've been kind of talking about that. You own your mistakes, apologize, and make amends. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important in all of our lives. And I think it shows up probably very differently in how we all deal with that. And I think it's hard for people to say, I was wrong, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, can we move past this? What can I do to make this better? One of the things I used to do when I worked at the U of I is work with offenders when they came through the judicial system there on how to frame an apology, which really had nothing to do with I statements.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sorry that you felt hurt by what I did. Okay, that's not helpful.
No,
that has nothing to do with an apology. And I think there's an art to that. And I don't think people really get how to sit in that to where you could look at someone and say, what can I do to make this better for you? I really overstepped my boundary there, and I see what I've done. Help me understand how to move forward with you in this way, rather than I'm sorry that offended you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it can go all the way back to, like, childhood, when, you know, one kid hurts the other sibling and mom's just like, hey, say you're sorry, you know, give them a hug, or and just not having that, like, actual example as we're growing up, taking the time to actually pause with kids and just say, hey, this is, let's talk this through, this is what it looks like,
right?
You know.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could all remember the sorry,
right?
You know.
Yeah. Say you're sorry,
snarky,
or go to your room.
Exactly. Sorry. You know, while you kick them on the way out. You got me in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. You're dead. You got me in trouble.
That's right.
Yeah. And in my AA program, this process of our 10th step says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, we're promptly admit it. And that is also tied to our 9th step amends process,
mm-hmm.
which means we recognize what our part was, and we go to the person, we don't mention their part in it whatsoever, even if it might be significant in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And we just let them know that, yeah, we're sorry for what we've done, and we want to know what we can do to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the definition of amends is you're amending the story,
Correct. You
know, the event, and doing what you can. And sometimes people can tell you what, and sometimes they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it's up to them to frame what the amends looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I approach it.
Yeah, and that feels very holistic, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to do that. And I think, as you can see, this sort of builds on each other, mm-hmm. you know, putting out a wonderful boundary and then having the reliability mm-hmm. of being who you are and the accountability mm-hmm. for talking about this, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a whole conversation. And I think we probably can all think of people in our lives or that we've worked with or that we see examples of that they're just great projectors and project everything back onto someone else and take no accountability, mm-hmm. no blame for anything. And it's really disheartening to.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it can feel like differently than it actually is. You know, when someone puts it back on you, it's taken me a while to recognize like what's happening, you know, it coming back on me until I've been in recovery and started to understand what that really looks like as I've been practicing that with other people. And it actually feels really good to make amends and to apologize and to do it as quickly as possible. There's just a weight I feel like that happens when I wrong somebody and I don't circle back around as soon as I can, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then that squirrel in my head and the thoughts and everything kind of spins around, and it just leads to not good things for me.
And how is that from the other perspective when someone's doing that to you?
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to receive, you know, and to be able to have that conversation about something that happened and be able to talk that through. That recognition is wonderful. Yeah.
When someone else is taking sure. accountability yeah. and coming back to you and saying, ooh, hey, sorry mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah. It yeah. is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I'm doing that more than I'm receiving it, though. I don't know.
The temptation for me is to go, well, see, I'm right. You know, when mm-hmm. someone approaches me like that. And for me, that's unhealthy, too. In my program, I've learned to, when somebody, you know, does make an amends, I also need to look at my part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because quite often, it talks about it in our big book that, you know, we, because of our selfish, self-centered nature, we step on people's toes and they retaliate.
Mm.
And that's a quote from the book.
Mm-hmm.
So when we approach them, we have to also expect that they might bring something up that was unexpected.
Right.
And then when, you know, somebody comes to me and makes an amends for something said or done,
mm-hmm.
you know, I typically instantly recognize what may have put them in the position to hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I usually have some sort of hand in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Other times not. Sometimes we just generally get hurt.
Right.
You know, you think of the person who was grabbed and dragged into the bushes and assaulted. Their part in it were there.
No part. They have no part.
I mean, that was it.
No right.
Part. You know, yeah. Or a child who, you know, constantly witnessing parents battling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no part in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're even blamed. You well, should have done this with little Bobby,
right?
You know, and that's
exactly.
beyond mm-hmm. nuts.
Well, I can tell you from being a therapist for 30 years is it's very sad and very disheartening. And I just want to say it out loud because for people that are listening that do feel like they had a part in some of the crime that happened to them, I just want to say, please reach out and get some support, because those kind of attacks by strangers or someone getting pulled into a bush, people still come up with reasons in their head of yeah. why that happened to them. And what I tried to work with all the years I've been doing clinical work is I don't know why someone chose to harm you. That is what they chose to do, but how can we work with this now?
Right.
What can we do and how can we do it? Because answering the why is really hard, which is some of the reasons people take accountability on their own, had I not walked through that line of cars and made a mistake and went down the right row, that would have never happened to me.
That's a shame.
See? And so I think that's for people that are holding that kind of trauma and hurt inside of them right now. We can sit here and say, well, that wasn't your fault.
Right. But when you're in it, it can be something that you think.
And what causes people to think? I mean, it's true. Maybe if you walk down a different row or something like that. I mean, those things can be true and true in our heads. But why do people do that rather than look at it from, you know, the different perspective? The fact that doesn't matter what I could have done.
Isn't it hard? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because they lost complete control over everything in those moments of their life. Mm-hmm. And so if they could find one reason that they could have done something different, then maybe they can prevent that from happening again.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's why, you know, people...
And there's the fallacy of the logic.
And people will make big, broad stroke comments about things, which is why I wanted to talk about a recipe for trust, because how do you trust again when you don't feel safe at all anywhere on the planet? Walking around outside or in a grocery store or trying to build a new relationship or figuring out how to date somebody again or managing through all of that. It's really, really difficult. And that's what I just love about having some kind of thing you could put on the wall and saying, oh my gosh, okay, we got all the way down to the bottom and I don't think this person is really living up to any of this, and I deserve more. And that's where it takes the community and all of us to support each other and other people to bring to the table these kind of conversations so that we can help people figure out how to do this better and have more space for safety and love and community in each of their lives.
Yeah, because I think in what you were saying, I know for myself that being able to talk that out with someone, hey, you know, so this is what happened, say on the date or whatever, and talking it out and thinking about these things, and by saying it out loud, you can kind of discover where are things? Are they in a good spot? Is this person a safe person? Is this a safe situation? And being able to have friends to do that with. Yeah, good listeners.
Absolutely. And if it's a conversation that's not going well, there's red flags right there.
Right.
If someone doesn't want to talk about boundaries, reliability, accountability, which kind of brings me, you know, segue in a clunky way to the vault, but it's like you don't share information or experiences. They're not yours to share. I need to know that my confidences are kept and that you're not sharing with me any information about other people that you should be keeping confidential.
Very important.
And so I think that's another really hard one. You know, Brene Brown does talk about gossiping and how that commiserating leads to disconnection. And a lot of times people think by doing that kind of talk with each other that we're on the same page because we're complaining and gossiping about something that we think we have similar attitudes towards. And it may be a person, maybe somebody at work or somebody we know in our family, or, oh, guess what so-and-so told me? You're never going to believe this. It's like, well, yeah, I shouldn't even be hearing this, you know? And I don't know that we practice this very well, the vault idea of, well, in my field, obviously, you know, with HIPAA and everything else. I mean,
you're legally obligated.
Yeah, I'm legally obligated and ethically obligated. So for me, it feels pretty natural that I don't repeat things. But just living in this world, I know it's very different.
It makes me think of what I like to tell people about, you know, not repeating what someone told me is. And I have spaces like here and at my church at Restoration Night where, you know, we don't talk about things that are said. But I like to think of it as I want the person to tell their own story. It's so much more powerful if someone is sharing what's going on in their life. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't have the value that it would if I'm talking about it. It just doesn't, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think if you think about that person, you know, standing behind you and talking about the situation in that way and choosing your wording, if you're explaining something to someone to get some guidance, it can be I find it's helpful.
Yeah,
I find that when I listen to people who are gossiping, usually conversation is filled with conjecture, projection, it leads people down a strange path. When I have talked to people about my experience at SEL, I try and make it very clear that this was my experience and this was the consequences of the way I felt and thought about it. I don't want to influence their, relation, if they're working there, for instance, mm-hmm. relationship with it. But as far as, the vault, very big thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. There's that word there, anonymous.
Correct.
And, there are many reasons and very different definitions of that anonymity, going back to, being a member of, being labeled an alcoholic in 1935 was a pretty big deal. Now it's almost a badge of honor. I don't understand that, but conditions and society has changed in that way, which is great. But still, one of the things we say at the end of the meetings typically is, what you see here, what you heard here, let it stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And also with sponsorship. And that's a huge line you don't cross. It's somebody's deepest, darkest secrets. When you go through a fifth step and admit to God, to yourself, and another human being, mm-hmm. the nature of your wrongs. And it's not necessarily its events, it's the nature of it.
Right.
I was a thief. I was a liar. Mm-hmm. I did unspeakable things with women. I killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And those things need to be protected. And like Denise said, if they want to share it with someone else, it's up to them.
Right.
And there have been occasions where people have come to me and they're like, I don't know how to deal with this. And I'm like, it's not my experience fault. Let me call a couple people I know that have been through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll call those people and say, hey, so-and-so is struggling with this. Would you be willing
mm-hmm.
to share your story with him? And 9 times out of 10, they say, yeah, great. Mm-hmm. And they go ahead and do it. But that's putting them in the position where they're willing to do it, not just saying, well, Bob, He murdered his whole family,
so
I think he knows a lot about it. We'll have to try and reach him in prison, but,
right.
So, yeah, that's,
But on the basic level, what you're doing is giving that person that you're calling the chance to have a boundary.
Right, exactly.
So they can put a boundary out, like, I'm uncomfortable sharing this story with that particular person, mm-hmm. so just tell them I'm unavailable, and then you respect that, put that in the vault, and just say that's not going to work out.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Cool.
I like the vault. I remember listening to Brene Brown and hearing that, her talking about the vault. I could still hear her voice. It was just so cool. I love how she explains the vault. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Definitely.
I'm a big Audible listener.
And now we're on to integrity.
Choosing courage over comfort is integrity. Choosing what's right over what's fun, fast, or easy, and practicing your values, not just professing them. So this is living your word, doing what you say you believe in, and this is all the way from the small things, but all the way to the deal breakers that we've probably all had in our lives where something happened and it's like, I'm out. That's just, no, I can't do that.
Right.
I need to have integrity for myself and look in the mirror, and I cannot be involved with whatever that is. And then when you think about how does that show up in trying to build a recipe for trust?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. In AA, we say that we're going to practice these principles in all our affairs. And the big three, there's 12 principles, but the big three are honesty, openness, and willingness.
Mm-hmm.
And to say I'm practicing those, it will become pretty clear to somebody if I'm falling short mm-hmm. of practicing those things. And having an expectation of people around you to, be honest, mm-hmm. open to listen to you, which is important for building a boundary,
mm-hmm.
and, being willing to respect your boundaries, you know, that's, yeah, it's yeah. huge. It's huge. Yeah.
High integrity when people are looking or not looking, you know, just like who you are all day long.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really matters. And I just keep thinking with all of these that we've read so far that as you practice them, it's like, I remember my first boundary, you know, and then continuing to learn how to, you know, incorporate more that I needed into my life and just like going down this whole thing. They just, like you said, they go right along with each other, mm-hmm. you know, into the integrity as well.
And it yeah. has a lot to do with confidence and self-worth, because yes. for me, sometimes integrity means I've got to hold somebody accountable to something mm. and kind of challenge that and bring it up, because that's part of my boundary to keep my integrity, right? Mm-hmm. So then that could get dicey. That might not go yeah. well. And then mm-hmm. I would put them not reliable then. And they're going to go down a few meters on my trust scale, right?
Right.
It's like, oh, yeah. okay, that's really important to me. Mm-hmm. So what now what, you know? Some of those become deal breakers, and some of them are, we can agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. And I have friends like that. We mm-hmm. have different views on many things, mm-hmm. but we...
Politics.
Exactly.
Huge one.
And we're not going to talk about politics, but we can agree to disagree right. with people that have all these things that make them a trustworthy person in our life,
yeah.
to
right.
where it doesn't have to be that extreme... conversation mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. you know there's just no agreeing, and then what does that mean? Does that mean separation, or can we still mm-hmm. stay connected and honor each other's different beliefs?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, as you were sharing that, I was thinking about how someone being able to have a conversation with, you know, you or me or Johnny, and being able to sit in that time as whatever is being discussed, you know, mm-hmm. that ability to show up emotionally regulated to be able to have a conversation, I feel like is so important.
So important. Yeah. And to come to the table with curiosity,
yeah.
you know, be open to mm-hmm. trying to understand how that person thinks, and you can still disagree.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we've definitely got off the trail here. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As the...
It's like that willingness has gone away, and it's yeah. all about what I think, kind yeah. of a tone. Yeah.
If you don't believe what I believe in and you don't agree with me, then I don't want you in my life. And that's just not true.
Right.
There's many
right.
people that have, you know, a lot of different kind of beliefs, religion, food, mm-hmm. you know, right. what is fun, what to do, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to mountain climb, but I have friends that go do that. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. we can't be friends. We just have different... Right. interests, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But these are the things I think when you're really thinking about connecting with people in a closer way. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't right. stress it enough that we have to have some self-worth and some self-confidence that we do deserve to be treated well. And I think that's hard for a lot of folks. You kind of just go with the flow, whatever. And, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Right.
Yeah.
There's that minimizing mm-hmm. again.
Or comparing, because yeah. it's apples and oranges. Like
right.
you and I could go through the same experience, and we are not going to write out the 10 things exactly the same.
Right.
The way
right.
you internalize something and the way I internalize something, even though we went through the same thing together. We could go through a car accident together mm-hmm. or a natural disaster or something on an airplane, and it's just going to be really
it's
different.
A good point. Yeah.
Right?
It really is a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that video that I sent you all, the last radio show we did,
yeah.
Brene Brown, and
right.
you know, I just love that she, you know, don't say at least, you know.
Oh, yeah. the famous Brene Brown, yeah. the yeah. sympathy versus empathy. Was
yes,
it that one.
Yeah. That one, you
I
know,
love that one.
Where yeah. someone yeah. said I had a miscarriage. Well, yeah. at least you know you can have children.
Yeah.
It's that, like, right. oh, okay, no,
yeah.
no,
yeah.
no.
That's a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we can't at least people. I really just, that's a button for me. Well, at yeah. least. No. You're uncomfortable sitting in whatever we're talking about. So you're trying to make it a little bit better and silver yeah. line it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's not what you need. You need to be right there with that person and sit there. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm sorry.
Just holding space.
I don't yeah. know what to say. Mm-hmm. It's a perfectly fine thing to say.
It yeah. is. We don't have to fix things.
Nope.
Just being a good listener and showing up and just sitting there with somebody is
correct.
Huge.
Presence.
Yeah.
Connection.
Yeah, I had an experience like that with one of my fellows who lost a child.
Mm.
And he posed this question to me out loud, like, why did God let me get sober to go through this?
Mm.
And I just said, I think you asked and answered your own question.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hit him, and yeah. but without, you know, saying, at least you have another child, I could have gone a lot of really dumb ways with it, but, that was actually not long after we did that program.
Oh, okay.
So I gained a tool here.
Good.
Who knew?
Nice. Who knew you could keep your little lips shut?
Speaking of who knew, let's move to non-judgment.
Okay, I can ask for what I need, and you can ask for what you need, and we can talk about how we feel without judgment. And so whether or not you can do what the other person is asking is really beside the point. The whole point is to just listen, and you want to do what?
Right.
You know, why would you want to do that? It's like, okay, no. Why is that important? Help me understand how that is showing up for you, that you're bringing it to the table now. What can we do with this?
Asking questions, maybe being curious about it.
Yes, yes, but non-judgment. I think we can be very judgy as humans.
Yeah.
No, really?
I'm guilty of that. I've been working on it.
Yeah, I mean, we have to say I'm that person that says the obvious, like, you know, Captain or Princess Obvious, whatever you want to call me. I just say all the things out loud. And so, yes, we can be judgy. We can look judgy. Right. We can stand judgy. We don't even have to open our mouths and we can be judgy, right? Like,
I have told myself when I start thinking judgy things, Denise, shut up. Like, seriously, shut up. Shh. Think something nice. Yeah.
Because sometimes I can control what comes out of my mouth.
Me too.
But I can't control my face.
Yeah. Like it's what, like, I'm thinking.
I observed something along these lines the other day. This fellow had this really nice fast car. Spent a lot of money on it. And, it's a 200-mile-an-hour car. And this fellow looked at me and he says, why would you buy a 200-mile-an-hour car in a country where the highest speed limit is 80 miles an hour?
It sounds really pretty.
Like, dude. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Maybe he will go 200 miles an hour somewhere. I hope not, but, you know, it's like, seems innocuous enough on the surface, but it's like,
and in case he wants to go to the racetrack.
True, but geez. And I go through the three questions. Does this need to be said? Does this need to be said by me? And does this need to be said by me right now?
Exactly.
Yeah, those
and,
are good ones.
Usually I rarely get, if I have to ask those questions, I rarely get past the second one.
Right.
And, I can just in my mind go, they're an idiot. But, you know, I don't have to say it.
Well, and I think we get into this when we're looking at other people's relationships, especially if they're not the kind of relationship that we would like our friend to be in.
That's fair.
Why are you letting him and her do that? Why are you putting up with that? Why don't you do this? Why don't you say this? And so I think that's between them to try to figure out how to do the boundaries and all these things. And if you're friend is asking for something, then you can listen with non-judgment. But I think we offer our good wishes to people sometimes in a
That's
way that
funny.
Isn't helpful.
I never would have thought of that as being judgmental until in this context. That's cool.
Because that's not helpful, and that person isn't going to come back to you and say, you know what, this is what's happening to me. They're not going to feel supported to come to you to tell you something awful that may be going on in the relationship, because you're already like, I'd never let that happen. I wouldn't put up with that.
Yeah.
It's like,
or you should do this.
Correct.
Right. Yeah, don't should yourself or anyone else.
Like, exactly. Don't should all over yourself.
No.
Right.
No. Just don't do it.
Just don't.
So the last one I love, generosity, extending the most generous interpretation to the intentions, words, and actions of others. That's a big one.
Yeah.
To come to the table after all these things we just talked about and just trying to feel generous within yourself by taking a deep breath. It's just like, okay, I'm going to hear and I'm going to be curious and I'm going to open up my non-judgmental lane right here and see what we can do. I'm just going to not assume that you meant to say that to hurt me. Like, do you have a sense that what you said did hurt me? You probably don't unless I say something. So then that's me, putting out a boundary, kind of being accountable to myself in a way.
Right.
And then I'm going to rely on you to have a reaction that we can work with.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah, instead of, well, what comes to mind initially is that you know, I go from zero to, you know, 200. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And, you know,
skipping the adrenaline rush.
I guess an example of that might be I come to somebody and they share something they've done. And I'm like, do you really think that was a good thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, maybe I'm being a little judgmental there, mm-hmm. but maybe it was something that was like, maybe even they're confessing, I did this thing and I'm mm-hmm. just, you know, not comfortable with it. And responding that way would not be being generous to them.
Right. You could say, tell me more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I might say, tell me more, or, you know, how are you feeling about that? Or do you feel like you need to make an amends for that? What, mm-hmm. you know, which direction, you mm-hmm. know, why are you sharing this with me? You know, what's bothering you?
Mm-hmm. You well, know? Sometimes when we ask someone why they're sharing something, they might not know why they're sharing something with mm-hmm. us. We felt safe for mm-hmm. you know, sometimes another question to ask maybe as a follow-up is, you know, what led you to tell me this today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
And
like
that's good. And I see the generosity in that because yeah. you're leaving them mm-hmm. an opportunity to, you know, A, think about it,
mm-hmm.
Still feel like they're able to share this thing, you know, without you jumping on them about it, so to speak. You know, or it's like, oh, wow, you're an idiot. I, you know, what kind of moron would do that?
Right. Or that they need to justify something, because right. if someone asks me, why did you do that? I'm like, I'm going to have to give you a reason mm-hmm. as opposed to what brought you today to share that with me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a yeah. whole different thing. I'm going to why did I share that today? As mm-hmm. opposed to, why are you telling me this? Right. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think yeah. in motivational interviewing mm-hmm. and in like recovery coaching stuff, they say generally asking why isn't helpful,
because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. it can put somebody kind of a little bit on possibly the defense,
mm-hmm.
but just like asking more open-ended questions, or I like mm-hmm. you know, like what you just shared, like
mm-hmm.
yeah, what led you to sharing that with me today? And I feel like that curiosity makes right. it to where they can share more and they don't feel judged.
And you can ask how was that mm-hmm. for you right now, just sharing that mm-hmm. like that's pretty amazing,
right?
How was that for you?
I like that. That's another good one. Awesome. It's like you've been doing this for 30 years.
I know. What the
right?
heck?
I love it.
I love it, too. And I just love that this is a good conversation guide and just mm-hmm. a good way to basically figure out how to build that tower of trust, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
and rebuild it. Because a lot of times it's shattered in our lives, but I hope that people can understand that this can happen. It can be rebuilt. People can be trustworthy and show right. up in each other's lives in a way that's positive and safe and loving.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. And because as we're working on these ourselves mm-hmm. and people are seeing us show up in this way, you know, boundaries are for ourselves to, you know, they're the boundaries for us and how people treat us.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us be more healthy in interacting with people. And then, you know, you're showing people who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me a better person to be around by going through this and making sure that this is in my life, having good integrity and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So we lead by example,
right.
which is what her whole inventory is, Dare to Lead, right. you know,
yeah.
but being able to show people how to do this, mm-hmm. that we do the same thing. We need boundaries and we need all these same things in our lives, and we need to hold yeah. other people accountable and ourselves accountable.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think in trauma, like, your world can be kind of blown up mm-hmm. and so it can be pretty chaotic there, and yeah, just that's a whole thing.
It is.
Hey, you know what?
What?
We are beyond out of time, but
wow. We did it again.
Great conversation.
Thank you, Valerie, for bringing this in today. And I think you stumbled on another topic for another time.
I can always do that.
and love having you here. Love having people with professional experiences, you know, beyond my limited world. Yeah. So it's always great to have you here and appreciate
Definitely.
It.
Definitely.
Love
you.
Being here. Thank
and
you
Denise,
both.
And Denise, your input, as usual, invaluable.
Thank you, Johnny.
And,
it's nice to be here today.
Yeah, it's good to be here today. And I'll close it off with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.